and welcome to episode 167 of Ribbon of Memes, a podcast where we interrogate films previously described by other chances as masterpieces. I am Nick, I'm the charismatic ex-con of this podcast, and I am joined as ever by Roger.
I guess I'm the other charismatic ex-con.
And we should point out at the outset, it is hot as all hell in the UK at the time of recording. Consequently, Roger is outside and I have my window open, but that's to prevent us from actually dying during the podcast, so we do apologise for any background noise you may experience.
Also, this brain is running on reduced capacity. You may need to wait longer for responses to whatever.
Exactly. There we go. Ably demonstrated. But we are moving from one very hot place to another, which is Las Vegas, because we are discussing Ocean's 11. But
twice.
Not just one Ocean's 11, two Ocean's 11. We're going to talk about
also,
the original...
But not Ocean's 22. They haven't made that on yet.
No, they haven't. Just the Ocean, though, there are has spawned a franchise. I didn't get around to watching any of the others, but I may do. We'll talk about it. You've seen them, haven't you, Roger?
I have. I have some thoughts on those.
Let's hear them. So I suppose this may be a sort of continuation of our Italian Job podcast in a way, in that they're all heist movies. And the first one, let's start with the first one, 1960. With the original, well, not really the original Rat Pack, but at the time, that Rat Pack,
if you don't have Flynn anymore,
exactly.
you're clearly or in bogey. The fallen latter days.
Well, the Rat Pack or Brat Pack or Frat Pack or whatever
era is the Rat Pack.
They
claim they don't like the name, but they don't seem to have any problem with people using it.
This
is the Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr. era of it.
Yes, and probably the best known, I would have thought. If you mention the Rat Pack, they're the people that come to mind. What they are is the Hollywood cool kids, really. The actors that everyone are in, sort of the it crowd of mostly male actor. In fact, almost exclusively male, but there usually was a token female amongst them. But
it's worth noting, I think, that This was the first time they'd actually all done the thing, which was all of them together in a film. They did a couple more later, but
yeah, there had been earlier eras of Rat Packs, which was just the cool actors hanging out, but they hadn't
really been
an ensemble film.
A lot of behind the scenes, you know, somebody gets offered a part and he says, "Well, you know, I can't do it, but you want to talk to this guy, my mate, who would be perfect for this." There's a lot of that sort of mutual backstretching. I'm not saying there's anything dubious about it. It's just these people all knew each other and boosted each other's careers.
And I suppose the reason we kind of dwell on that in the opening is because it honestly is the reason for the existence, at least of Ocean's 11, because the whole of the 1960 version is that the whole point of it is really to be like, look at all these cool, charismatic actors that you all know. They're all in one film together.
Yeah, and I think there may be a certain amount of the usual collaboration thing. If, you know, you are a fan of, as it might be, Sinatra. So you go and see the Sinatra film and you say, hey, this guy Sammy Davis Jr. is pretty good too. I'll see what else he's done.
Yes.
And so on.
But the brief synopsis is that Danny Ocean he's not an ex-con in this film, though some of his 11 are. Danny Ocean, played by Frank Sinatra. They were all in the Airborne... were they all paratroopers together? They were all in the Second World War. Together in a squad.
In spite of the fact that there is no way Sammy Davis Jr. would ever have been allowed in the same unit as them.
No, there are some jokes about some self-deprecating jokes about the fact that he's black, but none about the fact that it would not have been literally possible for him to have served with them. He pulls them together for half the film, the fact is I did know why they've been pulled together, because I know, without having seen either of these films, I knew it was about a casino heist in Las Vegas. But you wouldn't know that watching the original Ocean's 11, because we are well over an hour into the film before the reason they're all being gathered together is explained.
I think it would be fair to say that the real reason is that they are all bored now that they're not at war anymore.
Yes, that's the impression you get. They're,
I mean, obviously... some people come out of the Second World War and turn out to be Thor Heyerdahl, who had spent much of the war sneaking around blowing things up, so it's not surprising he was looking for a bit of excitement with the whole Kon-Tiki insult. But these guys, you know, it's a pattern. If you look at the history of safecracking, it always has a little boom. Sorry. As a war ends and there are a whole bunch of people who know how to use explosives and don't have gainful employment anymore.
Yes, yes. It's, bored, not quite bored rich people, but, bored people who are used to being able to commit casual violence and play with toys and cause explosions and now are struggling to do that in civilian life.
Yeah. The thing that really did strike me when I started watching this the first time was each time we see one of the guys introduced, and there's to my perception this little gap, and then they go on and do their thing, and my theory is that the audience is meant to be saying, oh wow, it's Frank, it's Dean. And it's just a pause for them to do that until they find, okay, and who are they now going to be in this film?
Yeah, it kind of zooms in, as if there's like a pause for, like a comedian after it's told a punchline, there's almost like a pause for the appreciative sigh or laughter or just, we're just going to let this sink in that this guy's also in the film, and it is almost always a guy. I think that's part of the problem watching it now is that, yes, even now, you know, I know Frank Sinatra, I know Dean Martin, I know Sammy Davis Jr. I recognise a few of the other people, but none of them are really the stars that they were anymore. And so once we're over the first three, I don't really recognise anyone, and so I'm less and less excited about watching them.
I spend more time with 30s film stars than with these guys.
Exactly, 60s are probably not our favourite era for films, though, you know, 40s and 50s we like, and we do have a nice little cameo by George Raft, who we met before in Some Like It Hot as the casino boss. George Raft famously turned down all the roles that Humphrey Bogart then used to make his name. But I feel that's part of the problem watching it now, exactly as you say. I think a lot of the experience of watching this film is, oh my God, I can't believe they got them as well in this film. But it doesn't work so well when you don't know who they are. And because of that, it's very clear that the plot is pretty threadbare. I mean, there's no plot at all for the first hour. It's just like, here's another one of the gang. Here's another one of the gang.
Well, insofar as there's anything here, I think it's these guys have been through hell together and they completely trust each other because of that.
Yes.
They may argue a bit, but nobody's saying, oh, you're trying to rip us off or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. There's no suggestion that things are going to go south because of sort of inter-party fighting or anything. I suppose partly we're spoiled. I mean, this is actually quite a tested formula now. The first half of the film is, you know, it's like The Magnificent Seven. The first half of the film is gathering all the characters together. The second half of the film is doing the thing that you know they're going to do for the... But I feel like where The Magnificent Seven, and now it's a much more polished way of doing it nowadays, is you would have a vignette which displays this character's unique feature. You know, this is the guy who does this, and this is the little scene that shows him being best at doing that.
When I've done similar things in role-playing games, I've asked the players to say, what is the five-second clip they show in the title sequence so that the audience knows what your character is about?
Except here it's like 5-10 minutes for 11 characters, and they're not really, I mean, so they're sometimes a bit adjacent to the thing they're quite good at, but sometimes it's very much just tell, don't show, you know, you're the best at goddamn electrician in the, you know, I mean, it's not like we see him in the middle of an extremely good electrical heist or something, partly because the electrician's in prison. But also
these guys are mostly not working as criminals when the job is got together. They're working in various low-end jobs. That's part of the thing. You know, the world doesn't really have a space for them anymore.
But that, I think
and
means
their notion
the film
comes along and says, well, let's do crimes.
Well, that's the idea, isn't it? That because they aren't organized criminals, they're never going to be expected that it's them that do this job because they've never done anything like it before. So I think that's part of my issue. The first half of the film feels very slow to me because it doesn't have the slickness I would say that a modern film does, but to be honest, you know, Seven Samurai does this better, and that preceded this film. Magnificent Seven, again, does it better. This here feels like it's relying on the star power, but I don't know most of the stars, so I'm not that excited. I also, unfortunately, I just have much, a bit like other actors I've talked about, none of which spring to mind at the minute, possibly Steve McQueen. I just don't like that kind of easygoing 60s guy, kind of lounge lizard type.
I get a lot better with Steve McQueen's stage personas than I do with these guys.
Okay, yeah. To me, it feels adjacent, though. I can't shake the feeling, and I know there've been rumours about Frank Sinatra. Probably a lot weren't true about his mafia connections. Probably some of them were, but I can't shake the feeling that he is a thoroughly unpleasant character in real life. That may or may not be true, but I find it distracting.
Yeah, I've had this problem with John Travolta. I know nothing about him as a person, but the characters he portrays always come over to me as, I do not trust this guy, I do not like this guy, in a subconscious way, which is quite possibly not anything he has any control over, but it impairs my enjoyment of his screen roles.
Well, I don't quite get that with him, but I understand it exactly, because you can't shake the feeling you don't feel at ease with this person. And they've all, and aside from that, this kind of smarmy, casually, not that casually, sexist, there's not really homophobia or racism in this film particularly, but there is a great deal of 60s sexism, and I can't help but feel these are the kind of people that drove that that kind of sexism, and so I find it unpleasant. Like, the women are just, like to Frank Sinatra's character, they're just playthings or conquests, or do you know what I mean?
Occasionally fun police, you know, the ex-wife who says, no, don't do this, you'll get into trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't hate it.
I think what we're saying here is, to some extent, and I'm cheating a bit because of what I want to go on to say next, is what we need is a really good hissable villain. Unfortunately, yes. This is late 50s, early 60s Vegas, where they're trying to reform themselves from the whole mob town image of the 50s. So we don't have one. We get the casino bosses getting together after the robbery and saying how terrible this is, but they do not say, you know, let's break somebody's legs. They say, what about our insurance? What about minimizing our losses?
The closest we get is it Cesar Romero's character?
Yeah.
I think it is.
Love
Santos.
That guy.
He is, exactly. So he's the
retired real gangster.
He's the actual terrible human who pieces it all together after the fact. So but I agree, this whole first half, we don't know what they're doing, we don't have anyone to dislike as a villain, and so I start to dislike the main group. I don't hate that. They have got a nice rapport. It is witty, you know. Dean Martin's character is the closest to the kind of witty one-liner guy.
And we are told at least that a lot of the actual dialogue was improvised, given a general outline of the scene, which, plausible.
I can believe that, in that it's sort of vaguely witty, but not really crisp, kind of snap, snap, snap.
What we don't get, that I'm not sure when this comes into the heist film, I think it had been established by this point at least sometimes, is something we'll come onto with the other film very much, of here is the plan, then the plan goes wrong and we have to improvise. And maybe the plan is actually going wrong, and maybe it's not. That's part of the deception that you can get in a heist film. But there is that feeling of danger, and we don't get that here. We have, you know, here is the plan comes off.
Yes, yeah. And so it slightly subverts my expectations. And I was kind of thinking, is this the first heist film? Is this the first time that? But it isn't. You know, there were like heist films back in the silent film days, and so it's a long way from the first heist film. But it is. It's what most heist films nowadays and previously have done, is introduce the characters fairly quickly. Then the formula is, here is the plan, step by step, here is how we're going to do it. The second half, or last third of the film, is this all went right, and then these are the bits where it went wrong, and this, now we get to see the characters think on their feet and get through this hurdle that they weren't expecting.
Whether that is improvising something or saying, aha, but we had planned for this all along.
Yes, that's usually the twist is, oh, you as an audience think it's going wrong, but actually, this was already all part of the plan originally.
But we'll come back to that, most probably.
We'll come back to that, because we don't really get any of that. What we do get
is a downbeat ending.
Well, it's interesting, we'll come on to the ending.
Yeah, but, sorry, go on.
Oh, the heist itself seems actually little more than a stick-em-up in the end. It's not that much. It's well coordinated.
There are some slight moments of tension, will the guy pull this off? But the answer is yes, he will. So.
Yes, he will. But then basically they just run in and say, give us your money or we'll beat the shit out of you in five different casinos at once. So it's, as I say, a well-coordinated stick-em-up. They do manage to get all the money. They chuck it in the bin. Sammy Davis Jr. is the garbage truck driver. I hadn't seen much of Sammy Davis Jr. before. But he is a compelling screen presence.
Mm.
I think
he comes off best of the actors here.
In terms of impressing
me as an individual.
But as you say, they get all the money, they get it out of the, they let him drive off the island. But the heist is, what is that, like maybe 20 minutes of this 2-hour film?
Mm.
Something like that. And then there's a bit of an extended sequence afterwards, and this is where Cesar Romero is piecing it all together. I quite enjoyed that. I quite enjoyed how they're amateurs, ultimately, and so they make amateurish mistakes. And he's a mob guy, and he knows, you know, he doesn't know what's happened, but he knows something has happened. And I at least
got the feeling of he's seen every way of doing crime right, he's seen every way of doing crime wrong. He is instantly on top of these guys.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I admit, I have a
soft spot for the man. He was typecast as a Latin lover type for a lot of his career. I mean, obviously, I think of him as the Joker.
Yes, exactly. Complete with moustache. So let's get on to the ending then, because as you say, it's quite downbeat. Ultimately, what happens is the real reason their plot, aside from Cesar Romero knowing what's going on, the real reason they get exposed is the electrician dies, and then he manages to piece together that they were all in the same army group together, and it transpires that they are gonna, the way they're gonna get the money out is ship it all out in his coffin, but his widow is convinced to have him cremated in LA, so all of the money goes up in flames.
This is not as grim as the original ending.
I wonder if this ending is because at this time they were still trying in a lot of ways to follow the motion picture code, and so they're not allowed to be shown to be profiting from crime.
Particularly a bunch of guys like this who are trying to be Hollywood establishment.
Yes. So what was the original ending?
Well, this is not confirmed from documentation, but Sinatra's son said that in the original script, they got away on a plane, and then they all died in a plane crash.
Bloody hell. Okay, that is a very downbeat. At least this one is like, oh, shucks, well, we had fun, guys. Let's move on.
I think a more recent film, particularly in the focus group era, would simply not have allowed that to stand. It would have to be these happy fun guys get away with happy fun money.
Yeah, I think because they don't suffer desperate, aside, you know, apart from the guy who died. And they do, I think the widow still gets her 10,000, I think, because she's not a criminal, so she doesn't profit from criminality. I mean, at the time it was still not liked, this morality, because they don't feel guilty about what they've not done. They're not like, oh, we're terrible criminals, we've stolen from these casino. I have to say, even though it's hard to feel that as a difficult moral situation is stealing from a casino, except that no crime is victimless, of course. But there were a lot of condemnation that they were happy criminals, looking like Hollywood leading guys and enjoying being amoral.
Let's not forget this is the year after Some Like It Hot. The code is definitely creaking, but it's not completely gone yet.
Well, Billy Wilder did a lot to destroy the code. Did his best to destroy it. Because this is quite an establishment film, there is something about it I just find a bit distasteful. I think it's Frank Sinatra, if I come down to it. But just the whole kind of, not the morality of it or the criminals, I don't like the smoothness and the whole kind of, I don't know, easy listening lounge singer kind of vibe to it. Is not for me. I find it a bit of a turn off.
Some of that, I think, at least in my case, is because this was the sort of thing that people who were a bit older than me were saying was absolutely great when I was a kid.
Yes.
And so it got played a lot as background and that kind of thing.
Yes.
And that,
yes,
that's given me a distaste for it, which is probably not justified. My general feeling was...
it's taste, that, isn't it? It's not...
The amusing bits can be quite amusing, but I never really got any sense of tense or dramatic or things like that I do expect from a heist film.
I think that it's a very flat, quite dull heist. It definitely picks up for me, you know, once they start the heist, when we get the idea of what they're doing, there's a very brief rundown of what they're going to do. Then they do it. and there is some slight tension there, but not a lot, because everything they plan works fine. It does go wrong afterwards, and I enjoyed that bit too. I enjoyed the ending, but ultimately I didn't really like the characters that much and didn't care whether they got away with the money or not. So maybe that was part of the problem from the tension point of view. I mean, overall for me, it's shorn of its star power as it is, being, you know, 70 years or so since these people were bankable stars. It actually feels a bit bloated and a bit staid. And as you say, lacking intention. Not unpleasant to watch, but for what it is, overly long, and not well paced. It's still enjoyable to see these stars of yesteryear together on the screen, but not enough to make it an amazing film for me.
I think it's easy watched in isolation to dismiss the pacing as that was the style of the time. But yeah, this is the same year. All right, Psycho was revolutionary, but Psycho moves a lot faster than this. Some Like It Hot moves a lot faster than this. North by Northwest, again, 1959, moves faster than this. Some of that is the burden of we've got these guys and we need to give all 11 of them moments to say, yeah, I want to see that guy's films.
Yes. I think that's perhaps what I'm trying to get at, is that it just feels a bit... It doesn't take many risks. It's very conventional. Despite the fact, you know, to my eyes, it doesn't feel very risky. It probably was, you know, to have all these people as criminals. But, I don't know. As far as a filmmaking exercise goes, for this to work, I feel like you need to really like the characters and for the dialogue to be really snappy and just for it to just flow. And it just doesn't quite, and therefore I'm not that into it. I think I am damning it from a distance to some extent. But as you say, there are a lot of films around this time, much snappier, to be honest, 40s dialogue from, you know, our favourite film noirs, from the classic bogey, The Maltese Falcon, you know, the dialogue is much snappier and wittier and just screwball comedies from 20 years before. Much faster dialogue, and I think it needed a polish along those lines. But probably when you're dealing with all those egos together, that's hard to do.
Also, a significant part of the filming is, you know, put 8 or 10 or 11 guys in a room and say, right, in this scene, you're going to have a discussion about X. Go for it, improv.
Yeah. That's great when it works.
Yeah, but if it doesn't, it's kind of hard to edit to snap it up, particularly with the editing take of this era. So
I think you need proper quickfire comedians who are used to that kind of quick wit stuff doing that, and a lot of these characters. So that's my feeling of Ocean's 11. It is a middling heist movie, honestly, not offensive, but the thing that was its main selling point in the 60s, the star power, has faded over time.
Yeah, I think I probably enjoyed it more than you did, but I have not gone on to watch Soldiers 3 or Robin and the Seven Hoods, which were the other big ensemble
Rat
Pack films. So, yeah.
Well, let's fast forward nearly 40 years to the remake, the reimagining, the whatever you want to call it. This is 2001, Steven Soderbergh. We've had him before, haven't we, with Traffic, Steven Soderbergh.
I sometimes have time for him as a director, and sometimes I think he goes a bit too much up his own fascination. So,
yeah, I think I'd be there with you.
But this is actually closer in concept to the original Ocean's 11 than you might think, and I think this may have been one of the inspirations, because this is George Clooney in particular trying to break out of his 90s heartthrob image to a more general leading man.
Yes.
And Brad Pitt as well. And so it was very much, as I understand it, those two guys saying, this is the film we want to make. We will get a director whom we can trust, Soderbergh, who has a fair reputation at this time. And we will just get a bunch of our mates in to have a good time.
Yeah, all of it. And again, it's the modern day. I don't know if they were termed Brat Pack at this point, or Rat Pack, or Frat Pack, or whatever it was.
Well, no, I mean, the Rat Pack was Estevez and that lot in the early 90s.
The Brat Pack was.
Yes, sorry.
That's the last time I remember it really being a thing, was that kind of Young Guns era of Kiefer Sutherland and River Phoenix and that sort of characters. But here is certainly the modern day, or I'll say modern day, it's nearly 25 years ago now, the modern day equivalent, George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Matt Damon, Don Cheadle, who removed himself from the credits, I assumed because of his accent, but no, it turns out he was quite happy to reprise that later on. But he had some monetary dispute, so is not credited in the film, even though he's a fair chunk of it.
But even though it's 40 years later, none of the 11 is a woman. There is, I think, one named female character in this film, and she is the prize.
Well, that I was a bit disappointed by that. I thought we'd have more progress. I mean, so this is Julia Roberts, who is a fine actor by any standards, but and she does some great scenes here. But she is a pawn to be used and a prize to be won. She doesn't really have any agency at all in the film.
I did feel she was looking, frankly, miserable for a lot of it. But yeah, maybe she read the script all the way to the end.
She really, I haven't seen the sequel, so maybe you can enlighten me if she gets bigger parts or more to do.
Yes, I can enlighten you about that.
But it's really a boys' club again. I mean, these guys are, the dialogue is much snappier. This film is much smoother, and this is where we do get the vignettes, you know, particularly of Don Cheadle's character. He's perfectly blown the safe open, but unfortunately his team lets him down. But we get these little vignettes of these people. Here's what they are. This is what they do. Here's what they are. And it's much quicker and it's more compelling because they're actual stories from their lives rather than here's Frank Sinatra introducing yet another identikit white guy that you're supposed to know that he's someone different.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this film is that after we talked about the other Italian job, which was made very much in the wake of this. This was basically the film that made heist movies a thing again.
Yes.
We've talked before about, you know, you do something original in Hollywood and it's a success, everybody will copy you.
Yes.
And this was the one that everybody copied in that respect.
Yeah, hence it feels very familiar because it has got all those modern tropes now. I mean, it didn't invent them as much as polish them up for a modern audience. We get the vignettes of the character. We get exactly as you said. It's the same basic plot in that on a meta level, it's an ensemble cast of Hollywood royalty being cool criminals in robbing casinos. So it's the same.
But this time we do have the hissable villain because, you know, here is the evil guy who owns these casinos.
Yes, Andy Garcia. I don't know if we've had him on Ribbon of Memes before. I think we probably have.
But don't recall us talking about him, but
he's quite good. I think in an ultra modern in a film nowadays, we would get a much more villainous. You know, the opposite of saving the cat. Modern villains nowadays have to do something absolutely horrible to show that they're terrifying characters. So we would have had a scene of him torturing someone to death or murdering a kitten or something, just to show us what kind of a person this man is. Whereas it's all, I mean, Yeah, I think we probably would have that in a modern, even a sort of a light, breezy comedy like this. We might not get all the gore, but we'd have him doing something horrible. Here it's just talked about that he is an absolute shit and everyone's scared of him.
Mm.
But he plays it well. He certainly comes across that way.
Yeah, I didn't feel it did a very good job. I mean, he's got a few threatening lines. Mm. Most of the time he is a guy who, I mean, depending on how you feel about the morality of owning a casino in the first place, but most of the time he is a guy trying to stop his casinos from being robbed, which is, you know, a feeling I can to some extent agree with.
Given that that's his, I agree, he's not, that's, I guess that's why I mentioned we would have had more signs of him being an absolute shit, because ultimately you don't want to be sympathising with the bad guy, and in some ways you're like, well, you know what, I'd probably do that, and I'd probably be quite annoyed if someone did that, and I'd probably shout at them as well.
I suspect this is, to some extent, Garcia doing a better job of acting than the part really calls for.
That's possible. I mean, I do think the acting across the board here is better than the 60s. Now, whether that's... it wasn't that the 60s were a bastion of bad acting, or... a lot of them are just playing to type... To some, I mean, George Clooney is trying to break out from his romantic role, but he is very much, you know.
And these people are all actors first, whereas, you know, Frank and Dean and Sammy are singers and actors. And the balance varies between, obviously, but.
I do, possibly the one who I feel gives the best acting performance of the 11 is Matt Damon, because I do feel he's more versatile in a way than Clooney and Pitt. I know Pitt does his, 12 Monkeys, mad guy thing. But I think Matt Damon is quite good at slipping into different roles, even in this role where he's imitating other characters. So I found him one of the more charismatic ones. Don Cheadle, I love. I think he's a fantastic actor. That may be the worst British accent I have seen since Mary Poppins. I'm sorry, Don, but it's awful. I mean, comedically bad. I hope he enjoyed doing it. He certainly seems to be enjoying doing it, so well done. I assume the plot twist would be it turns out not to be British after all, but no, it genuinely is a Cockney.
Having seen a lot of more recent heist films, I was expecting more twists than we get. I mean, the main one, I should say spoilers here, though I'm not going to go into details, but the main one is having got control of the money, how are they going to get it out?
Mm.
And yeah, that's the thing where it's are they going to have to come up with something clever, or did they think of this very cunningly in advance or whatever? But that's really the main one, I think more recent films give you a bit more of that.
I think you're right. I think in a way that's a response to this, though, in that this gives you a big twist. And it is, as you say, it's the, oh my God, it's all gone wrong. He's got, oh no, they thought about this all along. And actually, this is quite a clever way. So it's that kind of twist at the end. I wonder if films were like, after this, were like, well, we can't just do that. We've got to do another thing, because they'll be expecting this. And now we've got to put another twist on top. So maybe we are just many layers of twist later
quite
after
possibly,
24
yeah.
years. But I agree, because it looks and feels much more like a modern film, yeah, maybe I was expecting a bit more twistiness. But it's more satisfying in the sense that they do exactly what they're supposed to do in a heist film. It's more conventional in a lot of ways, but they go through the plot, they go through the heist bit by bit by bit, and so you think you know what's going on, but it also then undercuts it with, oh, actually, we had these little sub-plans as well. So you're it's a bit more tense because you don't know, is it going wrong or have they thought of this already? It's much slicker. I mean, the dialogue's much snappier.
It's dripping with style.
It's very, very style over substance, but there is substance there. Is that, I mean, it's what
I am going to praise the cinematography. This is Peter Andrews. Went to some trouble to... The style of the time was a lot of short, choppy shots, as we've complained about before. He went to some trouble to make it longer. So, you know, when somebody's doing a reaction shot, you have time to see their expression change.
Yes.
When there's an action scene, you can see what's where and appreciate what's happening and so on. There's a lot of facial expression, body language, that sort of physical acting that I have time to appreciate, and I very much enjoy that.
Yes, I totally agree with that. Yeah, there's a lot of actors being given a bit of a chance to do some acting on top of all the style.
Though one thing that I don't know if I would have noticed if I hadn't seen this immediately after Ocean's 11, these guys are not old war buddies. They are criminals who are hired in for the job. They basically trust Danny Ocean because he's got a great reputation.
Hmm.
But they don't know each other particularly. Some of them have worked with him before, some of them haven't. But they never seem to argue. They always automatically trust each other.
That's interesting. Yeah, again, maybe in a modern film, a more modern film, we would have had some inter-party conflict, but there's a little bit, but almost none in this film, I agree, which is unusual. Would it have added to the film, do you think?
I think so. I mean, it doesn't have to be much, but it's less than the original.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And I think that would have helped a bit.
Maybe the idea is Danny is so charismatic and such a leader.
He's just mind-controlled them all, yeah.
So, I mean, they do get away with it. How did you feel about the ending of this one? It's much less downbeat, but is also clearly setting up Ocean's 12, I feel.
Hmm. Well, I mean, it's one of those hanging, you know, if this film is a success, we will make a sequel.
But you can cope with it if not.
Yeah. I don't love any of these people enough that I really care all that much whether they succeed. But they do a good job of causing me to fake it while I'm watching the film, which is, you know, a good start.
Yeah. I mean, I like that. I think Cheadle's accent. Like his character. His accent.
As far as I'm concerned, this is very much intended as disposable entertainment, and as disposable entertainment, it works. I mean, it also works. What is it now? 20 plus years later.
Yeah,
and it's still enjoyable. So you know.
Yeah, I feel it. I completely agree. In that it's not supposed to be anything deeper. It does. Like a lot of the films that we quite like, actually, they're just doing a thing. They're not trying to be a comment on the human condition. It doesn't quite have the thing that I like in some of the other films, like the Indianapolis speech from Jaws. It doesn't have the kind of slightly deeper level. It's just slick all the way from it. Maybe, again, from 20-odd years later, it just feels a bit too slick nowadays. Nowadays, this would all be filmed with, you know, cameras wandering around and, you know, that kind of pseudo-documentary style. So it was quite nice to see one that doesn't do that because I've got a bit bored of it now. But I do wonder if it is a bit too slick. It just feels a bit too... It's a film, and it's a filmy film, and it's super film. And, you know, nothing bears any resemblance to how the real life works. To me, maybe if you're Brad Pitt, this is how life works. but it doesn't bear much resemblance to reality. Doesn't have to, but it sort of isolates it as a thing in itself that you watch to glurp down your enjoyment pill. And that's it. It doesn't trouble you very much afterwards. And, oh, there's another one. I'll watch that too and do the same thing. And I probably will watch Ocean's 12 and Ocean's 13 and Ocean's 8, which is the female one.
Well, we're not going to talk about that one today because we have a future project in mind for that and some other films.
Yes, but, we do. So tell me about Ocean's 12 and Ocean's 13.
So, yeah, these are basically same director, same stars, mostly the same supports. So 12, Andy Garcia wants his money back, and he is such an scary, unstoppable force of nature that the only way they can do this is to steal it from somebody else. Which would work better if they didn't spend the first act failing to establish that he is a scary guy, because frankly the first act drags to me.
Okay.
Is he
the similar character in that he's...
Yeah, I mean, he's
reasonable, but
he's meant to be menacing and unstoppable, and he's just, yeah.
Okay. Yes, they build up his reputation, which he doesn't quite live up to in Ocean's 11. I wondered if they'd ramp that up for 12, but no, not particularly.
And you know what they actually tried to do was borrow the Thomas Crown Affair and Entrapment. So there is a Europol investigator, Catherine Zeta-Jones, who is having a flirty "Can you catch me before I catch you?" relationship with Brad Pitt.
Right.
I mean, she's good. It doesn't really fit the theoretical plot of the film. It doesn't add tension.
Right, okay.
The 12th is Tess, Julia Roberts.
So does she get a bit more to do? Is she...
Most of what she's doing, there's an extended bit where in order to deceive somebody or other, they basically need a celebrity. So she gets to play a stereotype of Julia Roberts.
Okay.
Which, yeah. There's also a cameo of Bruce Willis playing Bruce Willis.
Oh, Bruce. I'm never unhappy to see Bruce
Willis. I think this is their joint low point of their careers, but...
Okay. Maybe I would be unhappy to see this Bruce Willis then.
So, all right. This is going to be in big spoiler territory. My real objection to this film. I expect trickery, as we saw in the first film. But the overall how we get out of this right at the end is, oh, I actually did the job on my own 10 days ago and didn't tell you.
Doesn't that make the whole film pointless?
Yeah. I mean, the film has been spending the previous however many minutes it is asking me to get involved, to care about whether these people succeed at what they're doing. And okay. And then to me, that is a slap in the face and saying, silly you for getting involved, it was all the trick.
Yeah, that feels like telling you you're an idiot for even doing that. Yeah, I agree, that's a terrible idea. I haven't seen Ocean's 12, but I agree that's a terrible idea.
I think this makes the first film look better, frankly.
Okay, that's interesting. Steven Soderbergh says this is his favourite one of the Ocean's trilogy.
Yeah. And for 13, which still made money, though not as much, I got a feeling of retrenchment. I mean, 12 goes into Amsterdam and Rome as the exotic foreign settings for the crime. 13 is back in Vegas.
Right.
One of the 12, 11, whatever, gets ripped off by a business partner, so the gang gets together again for another casino robbery because the business partner is a casino boss.
Right, fair enough.
And yeah, I mean, the structure is there, but there just isn't any jeopardy. There's never any sense that things are going wrong, getting away from them. It's just we're good at this, so we'll do the thing, and then they do the thing. This was the one where neither Julia Roberts nor Catherine Zeta-Jones comes back. I have a quote from Jerry Weintraub, who was the franchise producer. He said, "It was a script issue. We didn't have a place to really use talent like theirs, two big stars like that. They're very good friends of ours, and neither Soderbergh nor I would prevail on them to come back and do nothing, just to do it." Yeah, so
They managed to get all the other guys in, though.
Yeah, the wheelman has absolutely no driving to do in this.
But he's in it.
But he's in it. The explosives guy has nothing to blow up. But he's in it. If one of them had breasts, that clearly the world would disintegrate.
Yeah.
I am particularly unimpressed because the only female character we do get in this is Andy Garcia's right-hand woman. And what she is mostly used for is played for laughs. How utterly disgusting that one of the crew should have to pretend to seduce this horrible old woman. Ellen Barkin. She was 53 when they were filming
Ellen
this.
Ellen Barkin, she's lovely.
She looks bloody gorgeous.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I Al Pacino is the main villain, I guess.
Okay. And kind of grumpy Al Pacino.
Well, he last does manage to establish a character in this film as actually nasty, will rip your heart out because it amuses him.
Right. So that is what you need, really.
Honestly, he and Andy Garcia are just an energy band above the rest of the cast in terms of how they act and the characters they project. So
it's a bit retread and a bit phoned in, and not your favourite by the sense.
He goes back to the experimentalism of the 70s. You've got all these split screens of, well, people are doing things simultaneously. Sometimes split screens showing the same thing from a different angle because, you know, we got to have a split screen.
Because it looks cool.
It feels to me very by the numbers, and okay. I do not encourage you to watch it, though I'm not going to stop you.
Come round and extract it from your, I was going to say DVD player then. I do apologise about the motorbike going past outside. Okay, well, so for me, as far as masterpieces go, Oceans, the 1960s, it was not either the first ensemble movie or the first heist movie. I think it's a middle of the road that traded on its star power, and the stars have faded over time. For me, not a masterpiece. Interesting, but I wouldn't say much more than that.
Yeah. I found things to enjoy in it, but I did not enjoy it as a whole.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I didn't find it offensive. I've seen a lot worse films, but it's no masterpiece.
Really. And while I am not a great fan of George Clooney and Brad Pitt, I will readily concede that they are better actors here than Frank and Sammy and so on were in 1960.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't love 11. I think it does come out feeling overproduced to me. Just a bit too slick, a bit too everything's perfect. But that's a me reaction. That's not saying that's a bad film. I think, you know, do not expect it to be anything amazing, and do not expect it to be even slightly female. But with that in mind, it can work pretty well.
It is a perfectly pitched piece of entertainment juice for you to swallow. You will have a good time watching the film, probably. But it will slide out of your memory again, probably quite afterwards. There will be no deeper concepts to mull over.
Also, the thing that sometimes gets described as turn off your brain, you have to buy into the film's conceits. You have to let it pick you up and carry you along, rather than think, hang on a minute, that doesn't make any sense.
Yes, if you let it take you along for a ride, you will have a nice ride. I mean, part of me thinks it maybe is a masterpiece because it was so influential.
Well, that has always been one of our criteria.
Yeah.
And it certainly did. I basically single-handedly reinvent heist movie as a thing people made.
So I'm part way there, but I think, unfortunately, the film for me just is, it's just too superficial and too, exactly as you say, too slick, and just a bit too happy with itself. Does that make sense? A bit too pleased with its own slickness and smoothness.
It's that winking, you're going to go along with this because we're just such wonderful, lovable guys.
Yeah, and they mostly are.
Yeah.
But it's a bit too pleased with itself. So for me, it falls short just because of my own slight, not distaste, but just very slight irritation. I mean, that I didn't enjoy it. I probably will, despite what you've said, I probably will watch 12 and 13 at some point.
And this is possibly a good point to say, a thing that I definitely keep in mind any time I review anything, which is, you know, there is a difference between I didn't like this and this is bad.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Well, that's why
we are not claiming to be objective.
No, exactly. So. Sometimes I'll call a film masterpiece just because I liked it so much. This film, in many ways, is super slick. It's a fine example. I didn't like it quite enough, but it is perfectly enjoyable. In fact, more than perfectly. It's very, well, not more than perfectly enjoyable. That's incorrect. It is very enjoyable to watch. Well, there we are. Thank you, Ocean's Films. Thank you, Danny Ocean. We barely knew you, and that's true because he's got barely any character in either of the film. And we shall return, hopefully, on a less hot day.
Or will we?